The time now is coming up to 8 minutes before 9 o'clock, and researchers at Toronto's Hospital for Sick Children have come up with a way to predict autism earlier in a child's life. They've created a technique to identify which genetic variations are most likely to lead to autism spectrum disorder. That study was published on Sunday in the journal Nature Genetics. And it's an encouraging step because many experts say early detection leads to early treatment, which is key. Jonathan Alderson is an autism treatment specialist working in private practice and the author of Challenging the Myths of Autism. We've reached him this morning in Toronto. Good morning.
Good morning.
So, Jonathan, what more can you tell us about this research?
Well, it's fascinating research in that this team at SickKids in Toronto, they're able to get closer and closer and closer to possibly what causes autism. So they're starting to look at that. And the way to think about this is, for quite a few years now, we've known that there's about 100 genes on the human genome that relate, if you will, to some of the behaviors and disorders that make up autism. And in this study, what they've done is they've gone even another level closer, and they've looked at a part of a gene called an exon. And without going into that, what that allows us to do when we're looking at these little pieces of the gene is to look at much more specific individual behaviors and individual mutations rather than an entire one gene, if you will, can do a lot of different things. And so now we're looking at the parts of genes.
Does this mean we're closer to finding out what causes autism in the first place?
Well, I think that, as Dr. Shearer would say, we're starting to understand that there's many different parts to autism. So the answer to your question is yes, but the caution is there's not likely one cause. And there's not likely one type of autism. In fact, we're talking more and more about subsets of autism. And any parent that is listening or that will tell you, once you've met one person with autism, you've met one person with autism, because there's really, really a broad range of how it's expressed. But the research is exciting and very important.
Why is it so important right now to have this?
Well, I think for a number of reasons. You know, anytime a study comes out that is identifying the underlying biological components of autism, I think it reminds us all that a person with autism, if you see a child, for example, out in public, moving his body in different ways, behaving differently, or not able to communicate in the ways that you're wanting, is that it's not because the child's misbehaving, and it's not because a parent is being a bad parent or out of control. It's that there's an underlying biological issue happening for this child that's affecting the way that they think and their cognition. And so I think that's important. Secondly, is that each time that we look at biology, it reminds us that we need to be also looking at treatments that are biologically based and not just behavioral interventions. Behavioral interventions are very important, and it's what our government funds primarily. But it's interesting that the leading research through Dr. Shearer's research here at SickKids is biologically based, and yet the only treatment that we're offered currently is behavioral based. So this, you know, raises some interesting questions around treatment.
Well, when we know that this could diagnose children with autism earlier, how could that potentially lead to more biologically based treatment?
Well, you know, and this raises ethical questions, though. When we're talking about genetics, obviously, and you start talking about genetic engineering, and would you go in and actually change the genetics of someone that you knew may or may not have autism? And that's an important point to make, by the way. The study did say that about only half of people with autism that they looked at had these mutations, and half didn't. So it's not 100% predictive. And in fact, siblings of these people with autism who also carry the mutations were unaffected. So it's not entirely conclusive, but to your question about early intervention, you might be able to intervene earlier with maybe drugs or genetic modifications, but right now the behavioral interventions that we do use begin very early. I know some programs start as young as 2 years old with helping children who have had early diagnoses.
If we are able to tell, you mentioned in siblings, that there mm-hmm. are similar genetic mutations, but only mm-hmm. one child may exhibit autism, then does that give us a new way to look at treatment and how these genetic changes can exhibit in different children?
Yeah, that's a very insightful question. And in fact, Dr. Shearer, coming back to his research, they've really been looking at many different parts of this and in an area that's called epigenetics. It's very interesting stuff. And epigenetics is really, just very briefly, is the idea that genes don't act alone, that they interact with the environment. And without going into discussion of whether toxins in the environment cause autism or not, that's not the point. The point is that you may have these mutations happen and genes that are predictive of autism, but that when they interact with certain stressors in the environment, whether it's toxins or behavioral stressors, that might cause the gene to express itself, as you will, what they call expressing a phenotype. And so you could have two members of a family who have the same genetic makeup, and yet one, if you will, succumbs to the environmental impact and one doesn't. This is one way of thinking about it. And again, this isn't conclusive. Some of this is theoretical, and they're still trying to determine. You can imagine how many different permutations there are between 100 genes times X amount of exons down on a micro level, and then all of the environmental factors, and they're trying to tease this out. So it's going to be a number of years yet before I think we understand what we're calling these subsets of autism.
Well, we've kind of seen the same thing with cancer research when you talk about somebody having a gene that makes them more vulnerable, but then something, you know, quote unquote, triggers that gene, right?
That's exactly right. It's a great analogy, and it's something that I bring up all the time, which is whereas with people diagnosed with different forms of cancer, different levels even, if you will, that there's different kinds of treatments available. There's not one chemotherapy that we use for all cancers. To us now, thinking that would be crazy. And yet you have this broad spectrum of autism in this wide population that's very unique and heterogeneous, and we really only have one type of treatment, which is behaviorally based. So it doesn't make sense. It makes sense that we'd have different kinds of treatment for different, if you will, kinds of autism. And that's the work that I do called multi-treatment intervention, where we sort of look at an individual and design individualized treatment programs. And I think that's really where the field needs to go on a treatment end, on a research end. Dr. Shearer and others around the world are working really hard to try and uncover these subsets, if you will, of autism.
Well, Jonathan, I could keep you here for the next half hour and continue this discussion. I'd be delighted to. But
I'm interested in it, too. It's fascinating.
It is, and I want to keep going, but unfortunately, we have to turn you over to somebody else now, so I want to thank you so much for being here with us. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
That is Jonathan Alderson. He is an autism treatment specialist working in private practice and the author of Challenging the Myths of Autism. We reached him this morning in Toronto.